An Ave Maria by Icelandic composer Sigvaldi Kaldalons, and we heard Víkingur Ólafsson from his album From Afar. The Icelandic classical superstar returns to Toronto in less than 2 weeks' time to perform Brahms's Piano Concerto No. 1. The program is called Jimeno Conducts the Best of Brahms, running June 12th through 15th at Roy Thompson Hall. And after Víkingur plays, it is rounded out with the revered composer's Symphony No. 4. But that's not all. You're listening to Sunday Night at the TSO. I'm Kathleen Kadrioka. Well, speaking of things Icelandic, I just got back from Iceland, where I'm always amazed by the depth of creativity generated from that small Arctic island. And it's not just the creativity itself, but the awareness of the general population that they have regarding the artists in their midst. They're very in touch and engaged. With the likes of Víkingur Ólafsson, Hildur Guðnadóttir, Daniel Bjarnason, and others, the cat is out of the bag on the world stage about Icelandic talent. But Icelanders have always been aware of what they got. And coming up, you'll have a chance to get in the know about rising Canadian talent in the world of composition. Each of the performances of Jimeno Conducts the Best of Brahms includes a world premiere by one of three next-gen composers. Each of these artists has been mentored by the TSO's RBC affiliate composer, Liam Ritz, and they'll have a new work played by the TSO. On June 12th, the program opens with Amy Brandon's Killilil. She's an award-winning composer based in Nova Scotia. June 15th, Blackfoot composer, now studying Lethbridge, Sonny Ray Day Ryder will have his work, Calistiaga, Daughter of the Cosmos, performed. And in between, on June 14th, the program opens with Roy. And that is a work by my guest tonight, Andrew James Clark. Hailing from right here in Toronto, his professional development includes a composition fellowship with the Hamilton Philharmonic, a conducting apprenticeship with Orchestra Toronto, participation in the Amadeus Choir's Choral Creation Lab, among others. And he joins me now to tell us about this next exciting opportunity, being one of the TSO's next-gen composers. Andrew James Clark, welcome to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And we have a few get-to-know-you questions because you're a new guest to the show.
Okay.
Everybody goes through this, so you're not alone.
All right.
Who is your favorite non-classical, non-orchestral artist?
Well, my musical tastes have changed a lot over the past few years, but about 6 years ago, my wife introduced me to the music of Tigran Hamasyan, who's a jazz pianist from Armenia. And it's usually what we listen to in the car. It's the only thing we can agree on. He's known for his rhythmic complexity. I really like his work. Even though he and I are in very different genres, I kind of feel like our music is reaching in the same direction. He uses rhythm kind of as the basis of his musical storytelling, and I really, really like it.
What's your favorite instrument in the orchestra?
Well, if I had to sacrifice all of them, I guess I would keep the bass drum. I think what draws me to orchestral music in general is the larger-than-life quality and the massive sound structures that can be created. And the bass drum can do that instantaneously. If anybody's been lucky enough to stand beside a percussionist when they actually whack the thing, to me it feels like the universe is cracked open. I love listening to the decay and the overtones and the timelessness. It has a primal feel. I think that one I'd keep.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because I was at the TSO the other day, and it was occurring to me, I was enjoying that larger than life sound as you describe it, and thinking, yeah, what a huge part the timpani plays, mm-hmm. The percussion in general plays in that, and it's the kind of thing that you might not even be conscious of.
As a listener,
because it's just a part of the whole, but it's
it's like an underlying presence. That's
cool. What's your dream travel destination?
Well, for a long time, you'll probably laugh, for a long time it was Vienna, because I just had to see where Beethoven lived. And luckily, just before the pandemic happened, I got to go there. Now I would really, really like to go to Leipzig and see St. Thomas Church.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, well, of course, where Bach worked. A few years ago, I read Bach's biography, Bach, the Learned Musician, by Christoph Wolff, who is the former director of the Bach Archive in Leipzig. You know, I used to just really love Bach's music. I didn't care too much about the person behind it. After reading that book, I am in just as much awe as Bach the person as I am the music. So I would love to just go to St. Thomas Church and stare at it for a day. That's my next dream.
I'm wondering what in there surprised you the most, actually, in reading that biography.
In the book?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of personal. When I was younger, I wrote, like many people, I romanticized what it meant to be an artist through the lens of Beethoven. I thought you had to have crazy hair. You had to be wandering around the woods screaming. And I thought, you know, that creativity came from mental instability, if you can put it that way. And when I read about Bach, I realized, oh, we can maintain our dignity and still produce great art. We don't have to be eccentric. We can just be straight shooters and still just go about doing art, and, you know, it still comes out great. So it really changed the way I act, believe it or not, reading about Bach's biography.
Wow, that's fascinating. What's your favorite area in Toronto and why?
Well, for me, it's Philosopher's Walk, because it holds so many personal memories. It's not an extravagant tourist destination, but just because of its place geographically within the music community. When I was 14, I began taking classes at the Royal Conservatory of Music. So I would go sit in Philosopher's Walk and do harmony assignments and eat lunch. Later on, when I went to the Faculty of Music is also connected to that pathway. I hung out with all my friends there. I basically met my wife there. Now I go see the Esprit Orchestra. I walk down that path. It's become the center location of my life just by happenstance. So,
tell us about your musical background. First of all, where did you grow up?
Oh, here in Scarborough, in Toronto, yeah.
And were you? What was your exposure to music as a kid?
I'm not joking. It was the New Classical FM, because I did not grow up around artists and musicians. So when I was very, very young, probably 11, my dad bought me an MP3 player before the world of iPods, and it had a radio built into it. So before bed every night, I would tune in to this station.
No way.
And I'm not kidding. And whatever you guys were playing, I would listen to it. And that's some of my first really impactful musical moments were listening to this station.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. And then how did you end up getting involved in music making?
Well, that started earlier. My parents put me in music lessons since I was 4. And I became a church pianist by the age of 12 at Heron Park Baptist Church in Scarborough. And that's a position I still hold today, 20 years later. That church has also become the center of my Classical Context concert series, which is a chamber music series that I run. It slowed down over the pandemic, but we're starting to run concerts again now. And most recently, some of my recent activities is I'm now the president of the Canadian Composers Orchestra, so which is an organization that a lot of people don't know about because it went dormant in the early 2000s. But luckily, Abigail Richardson Schulte, the composer in residence of the Hamilton Philharmonic, preserved their charitable status.
That's good.
And over the pandemic, she asked if I would be interested in reviving the organization. So that's where most of my energy is being spent now.
So how did you get started with composing? Was that right away when you got involved in music, or how did that come about for you?
In a sense, I've always been composing because I learned to play by ear from a very early age and was just always making stuff up on the piano. I think I wrote my official notated piece when I was 11, but I didn't seriously start composing chamber music until I went to school at the University of Toronto. And I wrote a lot of chamber music there, and again, would invite my friends to come perform it in Scarborough. In terms of my first professional composition engagement, that would have had to be in with the Hamilton Philharmonic. In 2019, I was their composition fellow, and I have good reason to believe that that opportunity has now led to this opportunity with the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, so it was really good.
Let's talk about that. So you're part of the TSO's Next Gen Composers Program, and how has your experience been with the TSO and working with them this season so far? Because we're waiting for the premiere of your new work, Roy, coming up in a couple of weeks, but how's it been so far?
It's truly been a dream come true. I'll put it this way. A little while ago, I turned to my wife and I said, you know, I really don't know what I'm going to do with my life after this program is done, because I'm not exaggerating. All my training, all the lessons, all the orchestration class, all the composition lessons, all the ear training was to prepare me for an opportunity like this. So I've been looking forward to something like this happening for the longest time, to getting to work with an organization like this. And once it's over, I'm going to have to do some serious self-reassessment to see what my next goals are. But no, truthfully, it's been amazing. I've gotten to work with Emily LaBelle and Liam Ritz, the composition staff there. They've helped me prepare my part so that when it actually gets to the orchestra, everything will be clear and easy to read. I've gotten to meet the wonderful librarians. And the organization has been very generous with allowing me to attend musical events. So anytime they're rehearsing new music or there's new music on the program, I'm allowed to go watch free of charge or go to the rehearsals, which is great. 2 months ago, for example, Thomas Addis was here, and I was able to go sit in to the rehearsals while he was rehearsing the TSO. It was a really special experience.
Yeah, what really struck you about watching him in rehearsal? Was there something, was a kind of aha moment there?
Well, he's a composer, and he was conducting the music he'd written. So he was communicating to the orchestra really heavily in images. He knows the sound structures he was trying to create. So at one point, he literally lifted up his baton and he was trying to get the orchestra to see some sort of tornado or hurricane revolving above them in the hall as a descriptor for the ink on the page. And they were negotiating back and forth, trying to transfer these images that he was seeing into the sounds that they were creating.
Already, I mean, waiting for the big moment when you get to finally hear your work played by the TSO, but it sounds like such a valuable experience. Why are programs like this so important for young composers?
There's really two angles to that. I think young composers, and especially Canadian composers, learn to be very independent. So if I write solo music, I can ask a friend to perform it. And if I write chamber music, I can probably save up some money and hire an ensemble to play it, and I'll mount the concert. But with orchestra music, it ain't going to happen. We need help. We really need these larger organizations to collaborate with so we can learn our skills and become professionals. The other side of it is, you know, and this is something I believe personally. For me, the word composer is kind of synonymous with musical leadership. So the Next Gen program is not only granting the composer participants a performance of their work, but we're learning industry skills, which we will then take to our own respective communities around the country and probably become musical leaders there, or in the very least lift up our own communities. So it's both getting the new orchestral music performed, but also training up the next leaders of tomorrow. It's got a dual function.
Tell us about the work that is going to be performed by the TSO. You haven't heard it yet.
No.
Are you nervous?
I was, but I've been thinking about this piece for a year and a half, and the nerves have just, I'm just numb now. It's been so long. You can only be nervous for so long. So it's, yeah, so the piece is called Roy. And when I first realized I was going to get the opportunity to write it, I gave myself a really, really tall order. I wanted to write a piece that would, one, celebrate the Toronto Symphony Orchestra, because I grew up listening to them. I wanted to celebrate Roy Thompson Hall, because some of my most exciting musical memories were made there. And as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to pay a tribute to how I came to classical music, which was through the radio. And so the piece is called Roy, after Roy Thompson. And it has to deal with lots of transformations of energy. One of the fun things I used to do with the radio when I was a kid is I'd flip through the channels really, really fast and try to amalgamate all this crazy sounds into new pieces of music. So I've kind of hinted at that in my piece. There's not stylistic shifts, but constantly fluctuating rhythms and orchestration. And I have to tell you this because it's such a stroke of luck, and I'm very smug about it. When I first began writing the piece, I had no idea that Roy Thompson, the man, had his first business venture as a door-to-door salesman in North Bay during the Great Depression, selling radios.
No.
So, wow. So there's this wonderful full circle moment where I named it after the hall, but I didn't realize how Roy Thompson actually began. So I just lucked out. It's this full circle thing. I'm very, very pleased with myself.
That's awesome. Now, you did mention that you're thinking, what am I going to do when this is done? But do you have any ideas for upcoming projects that you would like to share?
Yeah, well, I'm always bursting with ideas, and I actually have lots of unfinished projects I have to get done. So this year I'm really lucky. I'm participating in the France-Canada Cultural Exchange with the Poulenc Academy. So I'm just about to finish 3 French art songs and send them off. They'll be performed in August, and I'm really lucky I get to go hear them. So I'm going to make a vacation out of that. I have a series of 5 piano etudes that I'm writing. 3 are done, and I've even test-driven them in concert, so I need to finish the other 2. And believe it or not, it's been 6 or 7 years since I've written chamber music. I think that's a bit of a result of COVID disturbing my concert series, and I haven't had an outlet to write chamber music. So I'm going to start working on a second piano trio very, very soon.
Well, I wish you all the best for the exciting premiere of Roy at Roy Thompson Hall. What a great thing to know the story behind that work. And Toy 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 for that premiere. Thank you so much for joining me
tonight. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Next Gen composer Andrew James Clark. You can hear the world premiere of Roy on June 14th with his fellow Next Gens Amy Cooper and Sonny Ray Day Ryder having their premieres on June 12th and 15th, respectively. This is part of the program Himeno conducts the Best of Brahms. Get your tickets at tso.ca. Some of that Best of Brahms includes the Magnificent Symphony No. 4. Here's the final movement.